The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times, the News and Observer, and AAA Living Magazine. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Reports released in early November indicate that we're losing large ice capes known as glaciers. Many of these are found in popular tourist destinations. Today on Armchair Traveler, we will feature three articles about our disappearing glaciers. The first is headlined, "The World's Most Visited Glaciers Could Soon Be Gone." It's written by Maria Kramer and appeared in the November 7th, 2022 issue of the New York Times. We begin with the subhead, which reads, "The UN's cultural agency warns that ice sheets in Kilimanjaro and the Dolomites and in Yosemite may disappear by 2050, highlighting travel's impact on climate change." Now the article. Making the World Heritage List from UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization is a kind of gold seal of approval in the tourism world. The list, which began in 1978, has more than 1,150 sites nominated by their host nations and includes tourist destinations like the Great Wall of China, the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, and the Central Amazon Conservation Complex in Brazil. It also features some of the world's most famous and most visited glaciers, including those in Yosemite National Park. But according to a report released by the agency last week, and that would be before November 6th, a third of them are expected to disappear by 2050 because of climate change. The glaciers that are likely to disappear include the last remaining ones in Africa, in Kilimanjaro National Park and on Mount Kenya, those on the Pyrenees' Mount Pondu, which spans the borders of France and Spain, and in Italy's Dolomites. The report, released days before the UN's COP27, and that stands for Conference on the Parties, and the Climate Change Conference set to begin in Egypt, poised a challenge to the travel industry, which is a large contributor to global carbon emissions, with a footprint estimated between 8 and 11% of total greenhouse gases. This, according to the World Travel and Tourism Council, also called the WTTC, aviation represents about 17% of the total travel carbon emissions. The report was a stark reminder of the critical role the travel industry plays in preserving sensitive sites and reducing carbon emissions, said James Thornton, the chief executive of Intrepid Travel, a travel company that specializes in sustainable travel and that organizes journeys to many of the glaciers named in the report. "It's very much a wake-up call," he said. "The key message is that ultimately for the travel industry, there is no vaccine for climate change. We must take urgent action to rapidly decarbonize. 50 of UNESCO's World Heritage Sites are homes to glaciers, and 18,600 glaciers have been identified at those sites. One-third of the glaciers in those sites are condemned to disappear by 20,000 or 2050, according to the report. These are projections," says Talos Garrelhos Resende, a UNESCO researcher from Brazil and one of the authors of the report. "We hope we are wrong, of course, but these are projections based on hard science," he said. "The glaciers will disappear regardless of any climate scenarios," he said, "but the remaining two-thirds of the glaciers in the World Heritage Sites could still be saved if global warming is limited to 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, again according to the report. The glaciers on the list are losing 58 billion tons of ice a year, an amount equivalent to the combined annual water use of France and Spain, according to UNESCO. The melting is responsible for nearly 5% of observed global sea level rise, according to the study. Enormous declines in the price of renewables and a global political mobilization have led scientists to conclude that warming this century will most likely fall between 2 and 3 degrees, far below the catastrophic projections of 4 to 6 degrees that were once made. But limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees is highly unlikely, and even 1 or 2 more degrees of warming will lead to more extreme weather environmental disruption and suffering for millions of humans. Still, Mr. Resende said, the UNESCO report shows that the travel industry can play an enormous role in preserving World Heritage Sites and helping change traveler behavior. He pointed to a 2019 ban forbidding tourists from climbing Uluru, a giant monolith in Australia that is sacred to the Anangu, or Anangu, an Aboriginal group that is the custodian of the rock. The ban, which came after the decades of campaigning by the Anangu people, has largely been respected by tourists and has given park rangers time to maintain the flora and fauna at the Uluru Kata Tuhuta National Park, a World Heritage Site. Tourists have been banned from climbing Uluru in Australia's central desert since 2019, an example of how education and collaboration with local communities can change traveler behavior. Mr. Resende described it as an example of how education and collaboration with local communities can compel tourists to change their travel habits and learn how to better protect sensitive destinations, lessons that perhaps can be applied to curbing emissions-producing behaviors. Travel companies like Expedia and Kayak can also encourage people to travel less frequently by advertising more week-long trips instead of three-day or weekend excursions, he said. A traveler who flies once a year for a longer vacation would, in theory, have a smaller carbon footprint than a traveler who makes multiple shorter trips on planes, Mr. Resende said. At the last COP conference held in Glasgow, Scotland last year, more than 300 members of the trillion-dollar global tourism industry, including tourism operators, heads of hotel chains, and leaders of tourism boards, came together to sign the Glasgow Declaration on Climate Action in Tourism. Since then, more than 530 stakeholders have signed the pledge. The deal required them to submit a concrete and transparent plan within 12 months to cut carbon emissions in half by 2030 and reach net zero by 2050. Travel companies have a special obligation to confront the industry's carbon footprint, said Jeff Roy, the executive vice president of Colette Tours, a travel company that organizes trips to World Heritage Sites. The good news is that the travel industry has banded together to share resources and work collaboratively to transform tourism in relation to climate action in a way that we have never seen before, he said in a statement. There is far more to be done, and quickly, as the pace of climate change is accelerating. Intrepid, for example, has started busing tourists between some destinations instead of flying, a change from past practices, Mr. Thornton said. The release of the report sparked concerns that tourists would flock to the glaciers and see them before they disappear, worsening overcrowded conditions at national parks and other delicate natural areas. All national parks suffer from too many visitors, and they've had to do drastic things over the last 10 years to deal with the issue, said Fred Bianchi, the director of the Worcester Polytechnic Institute Glacier National Park Project Center in Montana. The park was not mentioned in the UNESCO report, but scientists fear the park could be glacier-free by 2030. The pandemic led many parks to put in a reservation system to avoid heavy foot traffic. The UNESCO report provides another incentive for keeping that type of system in place, Mr. Bianchi said. But more tourists should see the damage caused by man-made climate change, said Luther Likes, a booking agent at Gray Line Travel, which organizes trips to Yosemite National Park, where the two glaciers, Lyell and McClure, have been retreating for decades. It's something to see in it in pictures, but to see it in person has a different impact, Mr. Lyell said. It's terrifying, honestly. In our next article, The Twilight of Africa's Glaciers, is written by Adrian Serpinot for the Washington Post. It appeared in the November 12, 2022 online issue of the News and Observer, and a photo that accompanies the article carries this caption: "The northerly glacier is visible between the fog on the peaks of Mount Kenya." Africa is home to three glacier-capped mountains. Within decades, scientists say the glaciers will be gone. Mount Kenya's will be the first to go, with researchers predicting their disappearance as soon as 2030. The mountain would be among the first in the world to entirely lose its glaciers because of human-induced climate change. The peaks of Mount Kenya, once covered in blinding white ice and now an arid brown, are a testament to losses already suffered in this part of Africa and a harbinger of what is to come. the 17,000-foot mountain straddling the equator, about 85 miles north of Nairobi, is Africa's second highest. For generations, Mount Kenya has been a source of tourism, of scientific study, of wonder and lore. Its verdant slopes have also become a refuge for Kenyans battered by years-long drought linked to climate change. But even here, rain is more sporadic than it used to be. When there is not enough grass to graze their livestock in their hometowns, herders come to the base of the mountain. "We're chasing the rain," says Elisha Kakalan, who had walked 5 days from his village of Chumvi. "The mountain is our only option," he said. On once fertile farms around the mountain's base, harvests have failed in recent years as rain has become scarce. Farmers have tried pumping water from Mount Kenya's streams and rivers, but these are already depleted because of overuse and reduced rainfall. As he stood in a dusty field, Musa Ole Kurobi, 71, pointed to the carcasses of his dead cows. Of the 40 he once owned, 28 had died of starvation in the past 2 years. Fields once filled with maize, beans, and potatoes were empty. His children and grandchildren were hungry. The Maasai elder said he still looks to the mountain's peaks for guidance. When they are covered in white, he believes it means luck. In recent years, they've been bare. Santuan Nanguni and her husband have lost 48 cows because of a lack of rain. "All our livestock are finished," Marapet Ole Nunganya and his wife, who have been married for more than 50 years, said at the same time. As temperatures have increased and rain has gotten less predictable in Kenya, every part of Mount Kenya's environment, from its mixed forest to its boggy heathlands and grasslands, has been touched. Some of the plant species have migrated up the mountain. Entire ecosystems, such as the bamboo forest, are at risk of being crowded out. Many of the once famous ice-climbing routes, including the storied Diamond Couloir, pioneered by the founder of Patagonia in 1975, are now virtually impossible because of how little ice remains. Mick James, a climber from Scotland, shook his head as he began his ascent. "We only have ourselves to blame," he said, "don't we?" Describing the fate of the glacier, Farron Savage, a 7-year-old whose father and grandfather run a wilderness exploration company, put it like this: "It's going to be extinct because Kenya is boiling in these times." Researchers who have studied the retreating glaciers on Mount Kenya and Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania say their shrinkage is largely caused by changes in ocean weather patterns linked to global warming. Those changes mean that across East Africa there has been less predictable rain and longer periods of drought, and in the mountains there's been less snow. "The glaciers starve without snowfall," said Douglas Hardy, a glacier scientist at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. "They are suffering for the same reason people are, a lack of precipitation." Masses of white ice covered vast swaths of this mountain during the most recent ice age. As the glaciers withdrew, they left behind the sloping valleys and rocky moraines through which hikers now trek. Today, the moraines are everywhere. The number of glaciers on the mountain has dropped from 18 in 1899 to 10 in 2004. Since then, scientists have believed the loss has only accelerated. Lawrence Gatoga, 67, has been hiking Mount Kenya for more than 35 years as a professional guide, and when he first saw the Lewis Glacier, which is Mount Kenya's largest and one of the best-studied tropical glaciers in the world, he was terrified of the hulking white mass. He had learned about Mount Kenya's glaciers in school, but said he never expected something so big. Crossing without slipping seemed impossible. Terrified, he froze. When Gatoga looks at what remains of the Lewis today, listening to the popping of ice melting, he said he mourns. "This," he said, "has been destroyed by man." "It's so small and sad," said Leonardo Braven, a 22-year-old Italian trekker, after seeing the Lewis Glacier, which scientists estimate lost 90% of its volume between 1934 and 2010. As glaciers get smaller, they have less snowfall to absorb solar radiation. "So the smaller a glacier becomes, the more quickly it melts," said glaciologist Rainer Prince, who has been led studies of the Lewis Glacier by researchers at the University of Innsbruck in Austria. "How long it remains," Prince said, "depends in part on a bleak question. How small does a glacier have to get before it's no longer considered a glacier at all?" His team ran tests to determine if altering the environment, for instance, making it slightly colder or slightly wetter or snowier, would allow Mount Kenya's glaciers to survive. And they found it's already too late. And our next one, our third article about disappearing glaciers, is going to take us to Yosemite National Park. Now, Yosemite glaciers, among the endangered in a new report of UNESCO World Heritage Sites, as we've heard, is written by Carmen Colras of the Fresno Bee newspaper in California. Now, it also appeared in the November 12, 2022 online issue of the News and Observer. And we began. Glaciers in Yosemite National Park have been included in this report, as we said. And then it goes on to say, a third of the glaciers across 50 UNESCO World Heritage Sites, including Yosemite, are expected to disappear within the next 30 years, regardless of efforts to curb global warming, states the UNESCO report that was released in early November. Its findings indicate the remaining World Heritage Site glaciers might still be saved if temperature rises don't exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to the pre-industrial period. The 18,600 glaciers identified across the 50 World Heritage Sites represent about 10% of the Earth's glaciers. They include the highest glacier next to Mount Everest and the longest in Alaska. Glaciers are of critical importance for sustaining life on Earth, UNESCO said. They provide vital water resources to half of the humanity. They have an important cultural and religious significance for many local communities and attract millions of tourists globally. Glacier loss will decrease the flows of the upper Tuolumne River, especially during drought years, Stock said, with impacts to downstream ecosystems. Technically, Yosemite's Lyell Glacier is no longer a glacier because glaciers move by definition. Stock said the most accurate description now is that Lyell is a stagnant ice patch. He thinks it could have been stagnated sometime in the early 2000s. Surveys this year confirmed it no longer moves, Stock said, because it's no longer thick enough to flow. The McClure Glacier is still moving, Stock said, but has slowed since it was last measured 10 years ago. Since they were first mapped and photographed in 1883, the Lyell and McClure Glaciers have lost about 90% of their ice volume, Stock said, meaning that what remains is 10% of what was photographed in 1883. Yosemite park rangers described conditions at Lyell in an April update for the National Park Service. And we quote, as we traversed below what was once the Lyell Glacier, it wasn't difficult to envision the disappearing snow and ice across the globe, the rangers wrote. The glacier is now considered a stagnant ice patch because it is no longer moving downhill and is rapidly diminishing in size. Not only is there less annual global coverage of snow and ice, but it has been melting earlier. This spring in Yosemite, the river flows are peaking in early April instead of late May or June. Just remember that if you live in the American West, your water probably came from the sky in the form of a beautiful, delicate snowflake. Each and every dendrite is as beautiful, as important as all life on this fragile little planet, including you. So please take care of one another in our only home, Mother Earth, they wrote. Urgent action needed to save what's left. Urgent action is needed to safeguard these unique places for future generations, the study found. Half of humanity depends directly or indirectly on glaciers as their water source for domestic use, agriculture, and power, UNESCO said. Glaciers are also pillars of biodiversity, feeding many ecosystems. Other endangered glaciers in North America include those in Yellowstone National Park, which are also very likely to disappear by 2050. In Waterton Glacier International Peace Park, straddling Canada and Montana, glaciers have lost 26.5% of their volume over the past 20 years. This report is a call to action, UNESCO Director Audrey Azoulay said. Only a rapid reduction in our CO2 emission levels can save glaciers and the exceptional biodiversity that depends on them. In addition to drastically reducing carbon emissions, UNESCO is advocating for the creation of an international fund for glacier monitoring and preservation. Such a fund would support research, improve communication between stakeholders, help reduce risk, and help warn people of danger. Glaciers studied by UNESCO have been retreating at an accelerated rate since 2000 due to carbon dioxide emissions, the report states, and are currently losing 58 billion tons of ice every year, equivalent to the combined annual water use of France and Spain. These melting glaciers are also responsible for nearly 5% of observed global sea level rises. When glaciers melt rapidly, millions of people face water scarcity and the increased risk of natural disasters such as flooding, IUCN Director Bruno Oberle said, and millions of more may be displaced by the resulting rise in sea levels. And those are sort of stories that we have covered in the past as well. So some of that material may sound somewhat familiar if you've been a follower of Armchair Traveler. Well, disappearing glaciers, sad to say, are not the only challenge to contemporary travel. We continue to confront the COVID pandemic and its endless variants as we approach yet another flu season already underway. A recent article written by Kelly Casalis Cho shows that the COVID exposure remains very real, as we read in her story. It's headlined, "A cruise ship with 800 COVID cases docks in Sydney," talking about Sydney, Australia. The article appeared in the November 12, 2022 issue of the Washington Post, and let's see what she reports. And it says, and I will state this, came from the New York Times, an earlier version of this story, Washington Post, I should say, an earlier version of this story said, "Ruby Princess cruise ship is owned by Carnival Cruise Line. The ship is owned by the Carnival Corporation." So the story has been corrected. So now we begin. A cruise ship carrying some 800 people who have tested positive for the coronavirus docked in downtown Sydney on Saturday, triggering memories of a deadly ship-related outbreak in Australia's largest city in the early pre-vaccine days of the pandemic. The Majestic Princess, which returned from New Zealand, is carrying more than 4,000 people, according to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, or ABC. Princess Cruises, the cruise line, said in a statement that all guests on board took a rapid antigen test within 24 hours of disembarking, and that passengers who had tested positive would exit separately and not take public transport. Australia no longer requires people who have tested positive for the virus to isolate, though local authorities have issued guidance that COVID patients on board ships should isolate for 5 days after testing positive. "Our onboard medical team will continue to support guests until they disembark," Princess Cruises said in a statement. It did not respond to a question about whether customers who had tested positive could isolate on board until they recovered, though the company said it would help guests access accommodation for isolation. The Majestic Princess was scheduled to soon sail to Melbourne, Australia's second largest city. The Health Department of New South Wales, the state in which Sydney is located, said in a separate statement that patients had been isolating on board. State authorities said there was a Tier 3 COVID risk level aboard the Majestic Princess, indicating a high level of transmission. Cruise ships have been a potent incubator for the coronavirus. In the United States, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention monitored such ships for transmission at sea for about 2 years. It also warned against cruise travel amid the Omicron spike during last year's holiday season. The CDC still recommends getting vaccinated and taking a coronavirus test before boarding a ship. In early 2020, Carnival Corporation's Ruby Princess allowed thousands of passengers to disembark in Sydney, placing the cruise ship at the center of one of Australia's largest COVID outbreaks. At least 28 people died, and 700 cases were linked to the ship, according to the ABC. Another Carnival ship, the Diamond Princess, also logged 12 COVID-related fatalities earlier that year, including the first Australian national to die of the virus. But the country has since lifted coronavirus restrictions on international travel. Proof of vaccination or a negative coronavirus test are no longer required for entry, and mask wearing on international flights is encouraged but not mandatory, according to Australia's Department of Health and Aged Care. The absence of restrictions is a far cry from how Australia first handled the pandemic. Sydney, the commercial capital, enacted a 106-day lockdown in 2021, while Melbourne endured the world's longest stay-at-home lockdown. Australia also closed its borders to nearly all international travelers for nearly 2 years, reopening in February of this year. It deported tennis ace Novak Djokovic for being unvaccinated, preventing him from competing in this year's Australian Open. The country has one of the lowest COVID death rates in the Western world. One side effect of cruise COVID rules, norovirus has plummeted. Australia's reopening came after it achieved one of the world's highest immunization rates. As of November 9th, nearly 96% of residents older than 16 have received 2 doses of a coronavirus vaccine. The country of 25.7 million people reported a 7-day rolling average of 12 deaths on Friday, or about half of that a month ago, and that would have been around November 11th of this year. But New South Wales authorities said this week that the state had entered a new wave of the pandemic, and some medical experts fear the upcoming holiday season will trigger a spike in infections that could challenge the hospital system in a country that has removed virtually all curbs on the virus. If the major public hospitals on the East Coast aren't overwhelmed with patients and facing staff shortages over the holiday break, I'll donate $1,000 to charity, tweeted physician Steve Robson, president of the Australian Medical Association, in response to news of infections on board the Majestic Princess. And by the way, most of Australia's population lives on the East Coast there. And Karina Ang contributed to this report as well. Well, before we conclude our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, let's take a look at some holiday activities that are taking place a little closer to home, in fact, in the Tar Heel State. And this is from the due date section of the November-December 2022 AAA Living magazine. From now through December 11th, Will Wilson Connecting the Dots, the Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art in Winston-Salem, displays intriguing works by Dine, a Navajo photographer and sculptor Will Wilson. The retrospective exhibition presents more than two decades of this indigenous artist framing and reframing of the world through his eyes. Check it out online at secca.org, secca.org. Now through January 8th, we have Christmas at the Biltmore. From the gardens through every room in the sprawling chateau, the holiday spirit's on display at Asheville's Biltmore. Daily tours through the historic home, decked out in its Christmas finest, and nightly candlelit tours reveal the charm and spirit of America's largest home. Biltmore.com/things-to-do/events/Christmas is where to find more information online. And then now through January 15th, we have Speedway Christmas. Speedway Christmas returns to Charlotte Motor Speedway. More than 4 million lights spread across the countless displays on a 3.75-mile course and around the racetrack. Holiday music plays over the radio, and the drive passes right through the infield, where there's a holiday village complete with Santa and more. Want to check it out? Do so at SpeedwayChristmas.com. Also now through December 23rd, Light the Nights Festival. The festival includes an ice rink and snow tubing hill at Charlotte's Truist Field, as well as shopping and holiday merrymaking. Enjoy traditional holiday music, holiday sweets, and visits from Santa. Online, check it out at milb.com/Charlotte-Nights/Ballpark/Christmas. So there's some wonderful things to do there, huh? And also coming up on the 17th of December, Wright Brothers Day, celebrate the birth of powered flight at the Wright Brothers National Memorial at Killdevil Hills in the Outer Banks. There's free admission to the memorial, the chance to walk the path of the historic first flight, and several events marking the 119th anniversary of Wright's world-changing accomplishment. Then we have Santa on the Chimney December 10th, training for his big night as he rappels down Chimney Rock at Chimney Rock State Park. He calls this his favorite place to prepare for Christmas, next to his workshop, that is. And that, my friend, is going to bring us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please direct them to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.